Okay, but democracy is not majority rule?
Not always, no. Should Hillary Clinton have been president in the year 2016 of our Lord because she won the popular vote?
No, because we are in a democratic republic, not a democracy.
Hold on, wait. Didn't Trump say we should keep doing that, but call it like the Trump shit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, again, what the
guys are doing is just attacking the other side, but you won't defend your own.
I'm attacking the second executive. They suck shit. The they're horrible. It wasn't necessary for him to do random shit under executive order.
You're interrupting me.
Because your point is
making a.
Okay, so we'll open up with some statements. If you guys disagree with them, feel free to line up on the left here. You want to start it off, Adam?
We're going to do questions in about 3 or 4 minutes. We're just going to do some opening statements about how we feel about the Trump admin thus far. We are 11 months into the second Trump term, and it's been an unmitigated disaster. We have repeated acts of authoritarianism to try to consolidate power heading into the midterms because their policy, everything they've done is so incredibly unpopular. Right now, the Republicans are trying to rig the midterms by redistricting Texas and multiple other states. The reason why they are doing that is because all of their policy has been an abject failure. We can look at the economy where unemployment is up, inflation is up since Biden left office, youth unemployment is uniquely up, black unemployment is up even more, which is an early indicator of a weakening job market. The tariff regime has been an absolute mess. Donald Trump, roughly a month ago, removed the tariffs on beef, which is a concession that the tariffs do increase prices for consumers. Why the hell else would he remove the tariffs for beef if they didn't increase prices? So the tariffs have been a mess. He claims that he's brought in all this money he hasn't brought in. The immigration policy has been even worse. We could have a debate about the border and how people feel about that, but the interior enforcement has been so damn unpopular. I don't know how you defend 80-year-old women getting their ribs cracked because they're thrown on the ground by ICE agents who are clearly undertrained. So we're seeing this happen in the interior enforcement, in the economy, the Epstein files. I'm sure I missed a lot of issues like no new wars and then going to war, or at least striking boats in Venezuela and putting a no-fly zone over Venezuela. A lot of issues in the first Trump admin have been dog shit for the Trump admin. And with that, if you disagree with anything we said, we can start doing the audience questions over there. Yeah. Quite a line. There we go. I still, that's a line over there.
No, they're just watching, I think.
I think they're just watching.
Wow, everyone's scared?
Corey, what do you think about the Trump admin? Corey, these are all the
You guys are too intimidating.
The Trump admin sucks so far. It's indefensible. I think that's why like 90% of Trump will spend most of their time talking about girl cock and whatever else. Yeah, there we go. We got some trans lovers in the audience. Lake and Riley and, yeah, I don't know. Debating any trouble on substance right now is basically impossible. I feel like one of the reasons why their counterculture movements, like the GOPers and everybody, are getting so popular is because Trump is so indefensible on literally all policy and all fact that you can basically just have whatever position you want. I will admit it's a guilty pleasure of mine watching Ben Shapiro flounder like crazy on stage when he realizes everybody doesn't love Israel or Jews as much as he does. And he's like, wait a second, okay, blacks, trans people, all of this, it was okay, but like, I draw the line at Israel. Here. Yeah, not okay. Okay, you want to bomb Venezuela and Mexico? Sure, but like cutting off support from Israel? I don't know about that.
Vivek is like, you can make fun of everyone else, but the Indian hate, it's a little bit too far.
That's true, which is why we're all hyped for J.D. Vance's new marriage soon to the Queen, Erica, right? It's coming up soon, right?
Got our first question here. Speak loudly, please.
How's it going? My first question is, how is it simply a reminder for the seditious six to say that it's not unlawful to disobey unlawful orders, but it's not just a reminder by Trump to say what sedition is, to remind people what sedition is? How is that different?
Well, what the quote-unquote, what Alyssa Slotkin and the other five representatives and senators did was quote the Uniform Code of Military Justice. The Uniform Code of Military Justice says explicitly you must disobey unlawful orders and you must obey lawful orders. So it's not sedition to quote that. The Trump argument is that they are using that as a pretext to tell soldiers to disobey future orders, but that's a shit argument too, because then we saw that Pete Hegseth may have given illegal orders to do a second strike in the Caribbean Ocean. So there are cases where illegal orders should not be followed. And then regarding the latter half of your question, I wouldn't say that what Trump was doing was sedition when he was defining sedition? Sorry, I don't get the last half of your question.
Just reminding people the punishment for sedition. Why couldn't we just say that?
Well, I think, so the issue is, and I know this is really hard, but like for the Trumples, okay, the issue is one of fact, right? So double tapping people that are shipwrecked in the ocean is in fact illegal. You can't do that. It's illegal under U.S. law. It's illegal under international law. Basically, anybody that has anything in the water recognizes the illegality of this. It's not illegal to remind people not to follow illegal orders. It's a core part of being in the military. You pledge a allegiance to the Constitution, not to some crazy presidential guy. So the idea that we can see like clearly illegal acts happening and that people can say, hey, you don't have to follow legal orders, I think is a lot different than Trump saying maybe we should hang my political opponents because of seditious conspiracy when they haven't really done anything, I would say, that rises to the level of seditious conspiracy. I think if we had like military people, examples of them not following orders because of what politicians were saying, it'd be maybe stronger. But we do have like examples of at least one strike that was like very clearly against international humanitarian law and against like U.S. military law. So,
can I answer the second part of your question? Because I do get what you're saying. The problem with the President of the United States proactively saying something is sedition and they should be quote unquote, he said, hang them, George Washington would. Now, this was a retruth that the President did. He's without a trial, without any due process, he's being the judge that they committed sedition, that they should be hung. So I just don't think it's okay for the President of the United States, the Commander-in-Chief, who has a lot of sway, to be saying that people are committing sedition before an investigation based off of his instinct. Do you get where I'm coming from there? That the President's word means a lot. Right?
Next question. We got the next question.
Next question. That was a good one, though. That was good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, this is for Destiny.
Class for the question.
This is for Destiny. Do you miss your ex-wife?
Not as much as I miss your mom.
He wanted the clip.
That, to be clear, that was kind of a joke response. I still visit with your mom, so.
Next question.
So, we claim to be anti-war, but when it comes to Israel, we're incredibly willing to send billions of dollars. Why is that? Like, what makes the mass murdering of babies something that we should send money to?
Are you asking me?
Either one of you.
Yeah. I think that, honestly, over the past 2 years, my position on Israel has changed a lot. I mean, after October 7th, I was clearly like, yeah, go fucking get them. Go get them all. Get all of Hamas. But I don't know the exact point. There's a certain moment where I'm like, I feel like this is way too far. And the United States sending unconditional aid without any sort of, like, we should at least have a say in what they're doing. Now, you might disagree, but I want to hear what you think on that. Should we send unconditional aid to Israel?
No, I don't think it should ever be unconditional. I think the big problem with Israel right now is we don't have a president with, like, a comprehensive vision of the Middle East. So, I mean, insofar as there are, like, unconditional funds sent to Israel, I mean, no funds from the United States should ever be unconditional. They're always conditioned on some kind of mutual interest. But the president right now doesn't have any idea or concept of what interest in any region of the world should look like. So, I mean, insofar as we, you know, Israel's unleashed, then they should be unfunded by the United States, as far as I'm concerned. If we are funding them, then there should be some kind of contingencies on those funds, I would say. I think it's pretty reasonable, yeah.
My friend has a criteria. He has two criteria for countries that we should fund. One is that they're the good guys. They're the good guys in the war. So Ukraine, for example, unequivocally the good guys. They are being invaded by a larger country. But secondly, there has to be a chance that they can actually lose. Right now, I know that Israel is surrounded by a bunch of combative countries, but they're not really, there's not really a chance Israel is going to lose against Palestine. So I don't know if we should be sending, number one, unconditional aid. Number two, to a country that's clearly the one that's winning. And number three, we should at least draw some lines. I mean, it's gotten way too far. So that's a good question.
Thank you. Thank you. Next question.
My name is Jeff. So I have a question. Since January 6th and the revival of the MAGA party and Trump into the 2024 election, I felt I've been pushed more to the left and well away from the center, which is like where I can kind of consider myself for like a long period of time. I look at the like my Republican family and my friends and like question or wonder why and how they can continue to support this. Do you think this is like a uniquely diverse time in American politics, or have like I become like chronically online?
Was the first part of that you felt like the Democrats have gone further left? Was that the first part of your question? Or
No. I have been pushed further left because of like January 6th.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a unique time in that the issue right now you have is on the left. They're still doing like politics and like governance and like doing things that you would expect Congress and politicians to do. But on the right, it's basically become like a reality TV freak show where it's like, what's Trump going to say? You know, what wacky catchphrase is he going to utter today on TV? And I mean, I feel like you kind of saw it in some of the debates earlier today. Like, none of the people up here seem very serious in defending Trump because his policies are basically indefensible. You know, like Mike Johnson has been, you know, screwed more than any politician in America. He was hung out to dry on that Epstein stuff. And there's a lot of grumbling of representatives in Congress on the Republican side who are like, does Trump even know that we fucking exist? And, you know, every time Trump comes out and he brags, like, well, I can fix the border and I can fix drugs and I can fix all these things without even using Congress. What he's really saying is I don't know how to use Congress. You know, when everything, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So in terms of being pushed further left, I just think the issue is that right now the right has literally no principled policy positions on anything. We've seen people on the right do things that we could never imagine, whether it's supporting new forms of taxation like tariffs or whether it's sometimes being incredibly dovish, saying we shouldn't be involved in any foreign wars, or sometimes being incredibly hawkish, like we're assassinating Venezuelan nationals. Like, there's just no, like, principled foundation. I think that's why you're seeing a lot of the infighting right now at, like, the TVUSA event between Ben Shapiro and your Candace Owens and your Megyn Kellys and your Erica Kirks and everything else, because there is no policy position. There's no principles. And, yeah, everybody in the Republican Party, I think, is trying to carve out, like, a new path forward. Like, well, what are we going to look like? Because right now it's a smorgasbord of crazy stuff.
I want to add on to that. I think your question was like, are we in a uniquely divisive time in American history? Absolutely. Stephen always says this, but norms in a democracy work like consent. You can't have meaningful consent if only one side is engaging in it, and you can't have meaningful norms if only one side is engaging in the norm. So, I mean, you can go back to Trump entering politics in 2012, but I feel like Rush Limbaugh and this whole like radio era, like Newt Gingrich, like these people entered us into a new era of politics, and that manifested in the Tea Party / the MAGA movements that is absolutely uniquely divisive. You are not too chronically online. That was your question. The President of the United States is calling for former presidents to be arrested via AI videos. He's posting AI memes of Chicago being invaded, and then he sent the National Guard to Chicago and then said J.B. Pritzker and Mayor Johnson should be arrested. The President of the United States clearly tried to steal the election with a fake elector scheme. You're not tripping. It is definitely uniquely divisive. And you know what really messes with me is the double standards between sides. Like, the average American thinks that the right and the left are about corrupt to the same degree. They think what Nancy Pelosi did in the stock market is about the same as Trump coin. That's what really fucks with me. They think that Donald Trump and the fake elector scheme in January 6th is the same as Hillary Clinton saying on Howard Stern like one time that Trump is illegitimate. You know how they try to compare those two exact things? The double standards and people not realizing how uniquely bad Trump is, I think it just blows my mind. That's what fucks with me a lot.
Good question. Thank you. Next question, please.
Hi, my question is about, I feel like we're focusing a lot on people's opinion when the opinions are downstream from the media itself, but it feels like we don't ever really, there's like a side effect, if that makes sense. So like we're treating the symptoms but not the disease. I'm wondering what can we do to better tackle that side of things rather than like focus so much on the MAGAs and the Trumples who are really just... you know, like they're gaining their reality from their media.
I mean, I think the issue you run into sometimes is like, imagine you're a parent, you've got two kids, and one is clearly more of a fuck up than the other. You can't really represent that to your children. You always have to treat both of them like they're on equal footing. Or if you're a teacher or if you're a therapist with couples counseling, you always have to treat both on equal footing. And the reality is, right now, there is a unique problem on the right when it comes to misinformation. And there's really, like, no way to address this without coming off as, like, politically biased or politically partisan. I think a really great example was the media environment we lived in 2020, where conservatives will complain, and it's like, well, media was all against us. And it's like, yeah, because you fucking morons thought that eating horse paste would cure your COVID, and you didn't believe in fucking vaccines. And I remember the debates, like, 5 years ago when I literally said, well, in 5 years, when there haven't been the mass deaths, there haven't been the mass, like, heart events, there haven't been, none of this stuff happens, are you guys going to be pro-vaccine? And I think a few people were like, well, yeah, in 5 years, maybe, but they weren't, right? Not only are they anti-mRNA vaccine, they're anti, like, all vaccines now. Now they give these arbitrary, like, well, we don't like the schedule, we don't like whatever else. And so when you're constantly in this environment, we have to treat both sides like they have the same problems. You're not going to be able to address the severe problems on one side. And I think the conservative media apparatus is, like, intentionally built out, like, this problem that now they're having to confront directly. I think you see that in, like, Ben Shapiro, where he's like, man, why are you guys all so anti-Semitic and obsessed with all this weird stuff? And it's like, well, what do you mean? It was, like, the next logical step. So I think that we have to do something to clean up our media environment, and we have to do something to clean up the, like, I guess the epistemic foundations that our media environment operates under. But the problem is whatever solution to that problem has is going to come off as severely politically partisan, because it's mainly one side that's having a lot of the problems right now. And it feels bad to say that. Nobody wants to admit it, I guess, because they feels like they sound too politically partisan if they do that.
You have anything to add to that, Adam?
No, not to that, but I just want to say, I know for a fact there are Trump supporters in the crowd. I know for a fact there are Trump voters in the crowd. Come ask a respectful question about immigration, about Kamala Harris. We don't care. Come ask a question. The Jew, whatever. If you're a griper, ask whatever you want. A respectful question. Okay, sorry. That was a good question, though. Yes.
Next question.
Okay, we got some MAGA. See,
we got some?
Yeah, we got some MAGA. Oh, that guy back there. But okay, let's keep going.
All right.
Hi, I'm a young conservative, but I align more with, like, moderate views when it comes to policy. And I've heard a lot about conservatives and what their views are and what to, like, cause more unity rather than division, because I feel like there's a lot of division right now with liberal and conservatives. And I'm wondering what you guys and what your stance is on how we should create more unity and have more conversations, because we know that, like, when we don't have conversations, civil war starts to happen, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm wondering what y'all's plan would be.
You're not going to like this answer as a conservative, but I think it comes from the top down. Oftentimes, I think the president of the United States has to set the tone and provide moral clarity on what's happening. And, like, a really good example that you probably disagree with, too, was when Rob Reiner was brutally murdered a few days ago. And then Trump immediately decided to post this long...
Nope, hold on, not immediately. It was a day after all the conservatives got on Twitter and were like, well, this is what our side does. Notice how we don't celebrate the murder of your guys like random Twitter people do? And then, like, 12 to 24 hours later, then Trump got on and then said, go ahead,
they tried to take the moral high ground, then Trump completely fucking undercut them and sideswiped them, and he just posted that. And then some of them switched positions and were like, yeah, that's base. Some of them were like, okay, a lot of conservatives thought that was way too far. Absolutely. I just think there's a unique problem with the way Donald Trump engages with the media environment. I mean, the way he entered U.S. politics 15, 10 years ago was by saying Obama wasn't born in the United States. He, like, made a conspiracy about Obama. He said he wants to lock Hillary up, and he tried to say the election was stolen. I think that there are problems with people on the left online who say divisive things, but on the right, I just see it as a top-down problem. And when it comes to division, even within your own party right now, within your own party between the Groypers and between the Ben Shapiro types, I don't even see J.D. Vance coming out with moral clarity. Don't you think at least J.D. Vance should come out and say, listen, he doesn't have to make it about his wife, but his wife is Indian. He should be like, listen, it's not cool to be anti-Semitic and hate Indian people. So I think if we had a top-down way to do that, listen, I'm not saying the Democrats are perfect either, but I just don't see Joe Biden or, like, Kamala Harris tweeting or using this insane type of shit, insane type of rhetoric, but...
And I think to add to this, the biggest issue with, like, calls for unity, as much as I appreciate it, is that when conservatives act unhinged, they get a lot for it. We lost the Gore election to a pretty crazy Supreme Court ruling. We lost a Supreme Court justice pick, which is a pretty big deal. In my maybe uneducated opinion, I feel like Amy Barrett could be, like, a swing vote in the Supreme Court. But right now she's just another conservative among, you know, five other conservatives. And so when conservatives can kind of act crazy and they get rewarded so much for it, and then after their disastrous presidencies, whether we're talking about Bush, whether we're talking about Trump 1, at the end with COVID and everything else, that when they can come back and say, well, we need to have unity now, it's like, okay, well, motherfucker, you got so much from your disunity, and now you're calling for unity. And, like, what do we expect to happen? Let's say that a Democrat wins. Let's say we have, like, a Gavin Newsom president from 2028 to 2032 or whatever. Who's the next Republican going to be? Is it going to be a unifying Republican, or is it going to be, like, a Trump version 2.0? And it's like, well, fuck. Like, one of the reasons why I love Biden so much, who's my American hero, I love Biden. What a great man. Is that I feel like Biden, for everything, for whatever conservatives said about him, he was the moderate pick. He came out, he worked on bipartisan legislation, he did everything he could to be a president for all Americans, and then you get Donald Trump that comes out, and he's like, fuck everybody else, here's who we're going to indict, here are the immigrants we're going to fucking kill, here are the states we're going to send the fucking military to, here are the ways that we're going to support Israel, because why not, LOL, and here are all of the weirdo foreign people that we're going to support when it benefits me personally, and then if you want to donate to influence my opinion on any of this, here's the largest two crypto scams in the world, right? And it's like, if we have all this stuff going on the Republican side, damn, like, where's the accountability? Like, what incentive does the left even have for unity? Like, it feels like a parent-child transaction all the time, and that, I don't know, that drives me crazy, personally.
They took away the nice guy, Joe Biden. They're not going to like what's standing behind
him. Now they're going to get the Gavin Newsom press team.
Yeah.
You know the Gavin Newsom press team.
Oh, yeah.
They say bad words on Twitter.
They cook.
They're real big,
and it's just as bad as what the President of the United States does.
True, actually, yeah, true.
That, no, I really appreciate that question.
Yeah, thank you for the question. Also, wait, real quick, I will say also, if you, assuming you are what you say you are, like a moderate Republican, I feel the worst for moderate Republicans, because a moderate conservative, like a never-Trumper, basically, is they either have to kind of become a liberal or they're like a fucking outcast from their entire friend group because they're all like crazy MAGA supporters. So your friends are all liberals who are like pro-choice and pro-pansexual and pro-whatever weird shit liberals are into, right? Which we are. We love that.
Oh, yeah.
But like, you have no conservative friends because all your conservative friends are like, did you see Trump's epic fucking tweet today? And like, that's all you have for friends. And that's like... Yeah, I feel the worst for, like, moderate Republicans. I have a few moderate Republican friends, and it's like, you guys got burned the hardest, I think.
Thank you.
Who would y'all want to run in 2028 for the Democratic Party?
Good question.
Who would I ideally want to run? Right now, every prediction market says Gavin Newsom is the front runner. I don't know if he's really appeal. I don't know if he'll appeal on a national stage. I mean, California is a pretty expensive state, and right now affordability is the issue. That seems kind of incongruent, right? Who would I ideally like to see?
It's too long. How are you going to say?
It's kind of
3 years.
Think
from
about
now.
It like this.
We don't even know if we're going to have a fair midterm election.
Think about it like this. If you asked people in 2004 who they thought was going to win 2008, no one would have said Obama. And if you asked people in 2012 who was going to win in 2016, no one would have fucking said Trump. Like. I would like to see, like, a Buttigieg or, like, I guess Newsom's okay. I'm just a big fan of his social media. I honestly don't know. I want to see a liberal who can punch back, and I don't want to see him do the Trumpian type shit, but I want to see someone who can at least get down and dirty and, you know, not just go high every time. What do they say? When they go low, kick him in the face. In a video game.
Not Kamala, she said.
Not Kamala. No. She can run in the primary. Kamala can run in the primary. I have no problem. There's going to be a massive primary. You know, this election, I've heard, is going to be the first ideological battle in the Democratic Party since, like, the 90s. I mean, we had Hillary Clinton win in 2008, but her and Obama were roughly the same in ideology. We had Biden in 2016. He was roughly the same. Or no, sorry, we had Hillary in 2016. I just messed it up. She was roughly the same as Obama. We had Biden, roughly the same as Obama. We finally have the first real ideological battle in the Democratic Party between the more populist economics, or are we going to go back to the center lib, stuff like that, or is it going to be resist Trump? Is it going to be the Gavin Newsom resist lib type thing? Who knows if in 3 years resist liberalism is going to be the topic, or is it just going to be affordability? I mean, like, AOC, I could see her coming in. I don't know if... For the third time in a row, running a woman candidate would be good. But if she wins the primary...
I just because you said that and you triggered me. Hillary smashed the popular vote.
But
she did. She won the popular vote by a lot.
Biden would have won the actual electoral vote.
Maybe. Well, we don't know. That's hard to say, you know?
I'm just making an argument. I think the Democrats have run uniquely unpopular...
Well, I think the future is female, so fuck you, Adam. Okay?
Thank you for the question.
He's saying that because he has a female name.
Is this the MAGA kid?
Hello, my name is Landon. I'm 14. I'm a young liberal. And my question was, what do you think is going to happen to the MAGA movement, you know, after Trump dies? Because obviously these people have had these opinions for a long time, and they just really needed a speaker. So do you think it's going to continue, like, as severe and as divided as we are now, or do you think it's going to kind of settle down?
I don't think anyone as divisive can fill that gap. I think that the conservative movement will probably see some infighting. The thing with Trump is that he had all of the Republican Congress people wrapped around his finger in such a way that he could get the Republicans to vote for him for anything. But now he's starting to lose that. So Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, he lost on an Epstein vote like 2 months ago. He legit got rolled on an Epstein vote. And this just happened again with a discharge petition for the Affordable Care Act. So Speaker Mike Johnson got rolled again by the Democrats and a small amount of Republicans. I think that as Donald Trump's power wanes within Congress, he's going to become increasingly desperate and the MAGA movement's going to fall apart. It's hard to tell who's going to take up the mantle. J.D. Vance doesn't have the same charisma. J.D. Vance doesn't have the same ability to wrap people around his finger. I don't think anyone as divisive as Trump's going to pop up. He's uniquely good at turning out low-propensity voters who see clips of him, these voters who really don't vote a lot, just like young dudes who play video games and do that. He's really good at turning those people out. I don't know if there's going to be a repeat, but what do you think, Steve?
It's okay to not vote. It's okay to, if you don't, like, I feel like one of the big problems with the whole Trump thing is because Trump was such, like, a cultural phenomenon. He kind of, like, bled over into a lot of traditional non-voter demographics, and then those people thought it'd be a good idea to vote because Joe Rogan, you know, was like eating horse paste or whatever. And I feel like it's okay to just not be an engaged voter and to not vote. Like, you can, it's okay to not vote. And we need more of that. We need to encourage more non-voting.
Really? Don't you think a healthy democracy has an engaged populace, though?
I think a healthy democracy is when the people voting are the engaged Democratic public. Not like Democratic Party, but like if the only thing you know about politics comes from like one of the top three Spotify feeds right now, you probably shouldn't be voting at all.
Don't talk about Candace Owens like that, bro.
Well, Joe Rogan's up there too, right? And then who's number three?
It's
probably like what?
Rogan.
Didn't I say that already?
Well, Rogan, Candace, and it might be like
Tucker, Sean Ryan.
Midas Touch is up there sometimes, but Sean Kelly.
The Midas day, people, they can vote, but none of the other ones.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was a really good question.
Thank you. 14-year-old.
14.
Isn't that basically how old are you again?
16. Okay. Old enough to fuck
Stop.
Your mom.
Okay.
Adam, tell him to let me hold the mic, please.
We have to hold the mic. That's the rule.
I mean, no. It's high how it is.
Let him hold it. Bro, let him hold it. Stop censoring the public. No. Give him the mic. We're good. Yeah, do it.
Thanks.
Yeah, there we go.
I don't know what your problem is, bro.
Yeah, fuck this guy, okay?
He's got the hat.
No, I'm just kidding. My name is Steven. I'm Steven, or Destiny,
sorry.
Yeah. Steven.
Yeah. Steve. I'm Mike. Mike in Munich. Adam and I, we know each other, right? But
we debated yesterday.
Yeah, of course. How are you guys going? You speak really fast. I watch YouTube videos at double speed. I wouldn't do that with you.
Thank you.
So, yeah.
That's a compliment to me.
You guys practice, you're ready, then you're good with it. It's, you know, you're just like Charlie Kirk. You're talking with people who don't practice on this type
don't
of thing
me on
a day-to-day
stage,
basis.
Okay.
Like
hold
you guys
the mic say. Closer to your mouth, please.
I'm just going to call you a couple
hold
of things.
Hold the mic closer.
Thank you. I was really, Steve, you really like Biden. You think he's a great guy?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think about the pullout in Afghanistan?
What do I think about the what?
The Afghanistan withdrawal.
I mean, it wasn't ideal. It sucks.
Ideal?
It
wasn't ideal?
It
wasn't
ideal.
That's an understatement, bro. I mean, hundreds of people were left behind. Thousands of people lost their lives because of the way they did it.
Thousands?
Thousands?
Wasn't it like there was an ISIS terrorist attack?
I know.
Well, but like, aren't you guys, well, I don't know if you're a conservative or not, but didn't you guys say like no Afghanistanis?
Thousands of Afghanis that helped the American troops were left behind to be killed by the Taliban because the Taliban knew who they were. They hunted them down and they killed them all. Biden couldn't give a shit.
Well, no, I think Biden gave a shit.
No, it was.
Well, hold on. Wait. The person who abandoned allies the most would have been Trump when he pulled out of Syria and abandoned our Kurdish allies to the Turkish murderers. Number one, number two, the Afghanistan pullout the Afghanistan pullout was an issue. Trump negotiated that pullout. Not only did Trump negotiate that pullout before Trump left office, when he talks about the military ignoring his orders, the biggest order that they ignored was when he said pull all the military out of Afghanistan. Yeah,
this is the problem.
Okay, what's the problem?
When we or you guys debate other people on subjects, you want to win. You want to stand your ground. You don't want to cede ground. You don't want to tell me that I was right about anything. You're going to give me a counter argument. Trump did this or that. I'm talking about abandoning the Air Force base before you get the civilians out. What the fuck? Holy shit. Did the media call him out on it? No.
What do you mean? His popularity suffered the most in the entire press. I don't know if it ever recovered after the Afghanistan pullout. I agree that like it was definitely not ideal. But
next
the
up,
issue is
Donald.
Let's talk about the pullout deal that Trump negotiated. When Trump negotiated that pullout deal, the Afghanistan government wasn't even part of the deal. Yeah. He went to Doha. He went to Qatar. And he negotiated the deal with the Taliban. When the Taliban was sweeping through after the U.S. was pulling out, there were Afghanistan National Army soldiers. It didn't even know what they'd negotiated. That's kind of fucked up, right?
It was obviously and indisputably an absolute embarrassment debacle that cost uncounted lives.
Well, it was like 11 that died in the ISIS.
You love the guy that caused that. What about the guy that promised there will be no vaccine mandates and then tells everybody in the military...
Did he promise there'd be no vaccine mandates?
He did. That was part of his... That was a campaign promise in 2020. And then he forces all these military guys and women to either take the shot or get out.
Don't the military take like 20 or 30 vaccines ever? Like, they take a ton of vaccines.
Campaign promise 2020, Biden, there will be no vaccine mandates.
I don't think he made that vaccine promise.
That's
and also, when you're in the military, you get a lot of vaccines. That's part of what you do in the military. You're not a pussy. You get vaccinated against the diseases.
Wrong. Nobody agrees
with you.
When you
deploy
to others, so the military should have been forced to take the shot. Yes
bro,
or no?
How many shots? Yes.
Is that a good idea?
Wait.
Yes,
how many shots do you have to take? You go up and down the line.
Experimental technology. Not even a vaccine. And
it is a vaccine. What do you mean it's not a vaccine?
It didn't do what it was promised to do. It didn't stop the spread. It didn't keep people from catching it. It was completely ineffective.
What are you talking about?
Wrong. Anybody that knows anything about it knows it was wrong to take it.
Well, if we're going to do fanfics, I mean, we can say whatever we want, I guess. Yeah. Okay. It was very effective. It was super effective.
So how about this thing, let's say, defending our democracy, a threat to our democracy. What about democracy? What is the basic principle of democracy?
Well, it depends on, I guess, what you ask conservatives.
Two words.
Well, how about a peaceful transition of power?
Peaceful majority rule.
What?
Majority rule.
That's not democracy. What do you mean?
Okay, but democracy is not majority rule?
Not always, no. Don't we have, like, the protection for minority rights? Isn't that kind of important?
No, I'm sorry. Majority rule is the principle of democracy.
Really? What about the Benjamin Franklin quote of, like, democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on what is liberty
or freedom or whatever? Yes or no?
Okay, we're talking to the audience now.
You guys don't want to participate.
Dude, to debunk your point, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote.
The point being that 70%...
Wait, I just want to be clear. Do you think Hillary Clinton should be president in 2016 since she won the popular vote?
Majority rule.
Majority rule?
You talk too fast, man. I can't understand.
Wait. Yeah, let me be much slower. Should Hillary Clinton have been president in the year 2016 of our Lord because she won the popular vote?
No, because we are in a democratic republic, not a democracy.
That's why I said it depends. Are we a republic or a democracy? It depends on the argument conservatives are making at the time.
Did he just score a point or something? We are living in a democratic republic. Of course, we have the electoral college. There's nothing that we're going to change about that unless the convention.
So it's not majority rule. You want to know? Listen. You want to know what
the principle
I define democracy?
I didn't say.
I define democracy with four words: peaceful transfer of power. Who's the president who thwarted the peaceful transfer of power?
That's not the point.
You're not going
to
answer that.
The point I wanted to make.
Who thwarted the peaceful transfer of power? Everyone.
There was a peaceful. There was a peaceful transfer of power, even in 2021.
After 12 hours of people saying, hang Mike Pence, that's not peaceful. He delayed it.
But I don't want to go there.
Okay, so you don't want to actually talk about democracy.
I want to talk about this. We're talking about Biden. And the fact is...
And you said he said Trump is a threat to democracy. And he said, how is he a threat to democracy?
Biden. I'm pointing out four good reasons why it was not to be respected at all.
And one of yours got knocked down. So three reasons.
Is that 70% of Americans... polled numerous times in 2024, did not want to have an open border policy. Did the Biden administration respect that clear majority? No.
When there was a
no
border bill, when there was a border
70%,
bill,
yeah. Steve,
when there was a border bill that was put up, who blocked that border bill?
The Republicans did because it was completely unnecessary in order to secure the border, as was proven 10 months ago when the border became secure.
So you want the president? So you want the president himself to just do everything via executive order? Do you know that like Congress is a part of the government, right? I just want to make sure. You know there's like there's a Congress, right?
Yeah.
Congress can pass legislation to do big border stuff, right?
Yeah, but that's
so isn't
not the
it
point.
Bad for Trump? Hold on. Wait.
Are changing the subject.
After 3 years.
That border funding that was in that bill in 2024 was not necessary in order
it
to
wasn't
do
necessary
what
for him to do random shit under executive order.
You're interrupting me.
Because your point is fucking retarded.
No, because I'm making a point you don't want to hear.
You're not making a real point. The point, can Donald Trump do anything via executive order? Can Donald Trump do anything against the executive? No.
You will see no ground.
Hold on. Do you think that Donald Trump, when the next president comes in, they could just undo everything Trump does, right? 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 Right?
That's not the point.
Right? No, that is the point. Right.
Point.
Can I hear that? Did he answer that? Can the next president undo anything that the previous president does if he only does it via executive order?
Absolutely.
Okay, wait. Do you agree with that, sir?
I didn't understand what you said.
Could the next president... Hold on, I'll speak slowly. I'm sorry. Could the next president undo anything that Trump does via executive order?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so wouldn't it be better if we use the Congress to do immigration policy?
It's not necessary.
Great?
The laws are already on the books. The Biden administration had the policy of not enforcing them.
What did they not enforce?
No.
They enforced everything. What do you mean?
Steve, 70% of the country didn't want the open border policy. The Biden administration maintained the policy.
We didn't have open borders.
I'm going to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Is that respecting our democracy when a clear majority of 70% wanted the border policy
changed? No, the fantasy world that you've constructed is not very respective of our democracy.
2 points, and we'll give this one up, okay?
Okay.
Trump proved that the funding that the Democrats had said in 2024 was required in order to be able
to close
the border was not necessary in order to do it.
Okay, wait, be honest. How mad are you that there are no mass deportations?
Let me make my 2 points. You're interrupting me.
One point at a time. There are no mass deportations, right?
I'm sorry?
There are no mass deportations, right? Mass deportations. Donald Trump, every time he gets on stage, he says there's 20, 30 million illegals. Yeah. He's deported how many? Like 100,000, 200,000?
The criminals first, yeah.
So none. There's not happening. It's not happening.
Why do we want to put these people in prisons where they may belong if they came out of countries where they were actually convicted?
I don't know. You tell me. Didn't they build the alligator Alcatraz? I don't know. You tell me.
You didn't want to let me make my point. You don't.
Well, I wanted to go one point at a time because I wanted to address the factual foundation for them. I understand you don't like to do that, but go ahead.
In the middle of my point.
Okay, let's hear point two. You had 2 points.
That's not the way to debate.
Let's hear point two.
It's the middle of the 2 points. Yeah, go.
Let's hear point two.
Go. Yeah, sorry.
I'm sorry.
Let's hear your point two. I want to hear it.
Yeah. So number one, I've already said it. Clear majority wanted the border closed. Biden administration didn't respect that. Two, Trump proved that the funding that the Democrats said in 2024 was required in order to be able to close the border was not necessary de facto.
This is not a long-term solution that Trump has proposed. This Biden border bill actually had increased asylum judges, which would help streamline the asylum process. No. Donald Trump has not proposed any real long-term solution. Listen, it's the same problem with tariffs.
There
needs to be continuity between administrations and policy. When it comes to tariffs, for example, if you do all of your tariffs via executive order, there's not enough continuity to actually, so let me finish, to actually create the incentive for companies to move over. Adam, if you want tariffs to work, they have to be on the books through Congress. The same thing with immigration. You can't just have short-term solutions, sign the pen, not actually appoint more immigration judges or people who can process asylum claims. Yeah. This is not a real long-term solution. Honestly, it's awful.
That's a separate subject. The thing is...
No, that's the subject.
With the border policy in 2024, Steve brought it up. Steve said that the Republicans were blocking the border policy.
They were. You said that.
That was only a funding bill. It wasn't going to change any laws. All the laws were already on the books regarding how people are allowed to come into the country and how they're not allowed to come into the country. Next point. So Trump... Why was Trump impeached the first time?
Was that for the Ukrainian thing, or was that the J6 thing?
The Ukraine. Thing? What was it? What was it called?
I think the issue was that he was making phone. I think he was making a phone call. I think he was calling the Ukrainian government and threatening to withhold congressionally approved aid if they couldn't dig up dirt on his political opponent.
I do presume, Steve, as a well-informed individual that you are, that you must have seen the video of Biden literally bragging on camera at the meeting of the Council on Foreign Relations about how he strong-armed Poroshenko to fire the prosecutor. He said, hey, you know what? I'm going to be leaving here. Looks at his watch. 6 o'clock. You know, if that prosecutor that's looking into Burisma and the corruption that my son is involved in isn't fired in the next
You're
interrupting.
Final response.
Biden said it on camera. If that guy's not fired, you ain't getting the $1 billion loan guarantee.
Yeah, this is called...
He did on camera. Indisputably, exactly what Trump was impeached for.
And the mainstream media didn't let the American people
know about it. What do you mean, no?
Biden was representing...
This is indisputable, Steve.
Biden was representing the foreign policy of the Western world, saying that in order for Ukraine to qualify for discounted loans, they had to clean up the corruption of the political system. Okay. Shokan was the head of their prosecutorial, their DOJ, basically.
Again,
their criminal
you don't want to see the ground. You don't want to say, you know what, you're right.
We got to move on.
Well, because you're
Michael,
not right.
Michael.
Why would I say, no, you're right,
Michael,
when you're not right?
Get the mic back to him.
We need the mic. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, thank you. Listen, I appreciate you. You're brave coming up talking. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. But also, like, there's a reason why nobody cared what Biden said until the Republicans saw Donald Trump do really bad shit.
I literally did it on camera.
Thank you.
Let's get the next one.
No, it's not the same thing. It's not even remotely the same thing.
Thank you, sir.
No, thank you for coming up chatting. Why'd you give the mic up, man? What are you doing? I'm just kidding. I'm fucking Don't listen to me, man. You fucked up. Don't ever listen to what I say.
Hi, I'm Andrew Holmes. I am a student at UC Berkeley, and I'm a conservative. And my question is basically, you yourself said affordability is the issue right now. And I personally believe that Kamala's policies would have been quite disastrous for the economy. She wanted a 25% tax on unrealized gains above a certain threshold of money, but that's like the biggest investors that she's talking about there. 8% increase on capital gains tax. Investment would have been completely stifled. Then she also had inflationary policies like the child tax care credit and also the $25,000 grant for first-time home buyers. And that would have caused just rampant inflation in the economy. And then further, she also pushed for an increase in minimum wage, which would have caused the loss of a ton of jobs that are entry-level that are very vital to American workers. And so my question is basically, how would you back the fact that you both believe that affordability is the issue with her truthfully disastrous economic policies.
Yeah.
Can
Adam,
I ask you,
yeah, what? Yeah. What do we do about that?
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you support Donald Trump's tariff regime?
No.
Okay, so you don't support that. Did you vote for Trump?
I didn't vote. I was 17.
Okay. Okay. You would have voted for Trump?
Yes, because I do believe his economic policies are not as bad as Kamala's.
Really?
Kamala's were disastrous.
Disastrous. Okay.
Yes.
You framed Kamala's economic policies as if they were radical, and some of them were a bit, like, not radical, but some of them were pushing the limits.
Not radical. I just...
They're not radical, but you're saying, like, they would be disastrous.
They would be disastrous,
I think
yes.
If we compare the two... I think if we compare the two candidates' economic policy, we can go to Kamala in 1 second, but Donald Trump's tariff regime, placing tariffs on every single country indiscriminately, except for Russia and North Korea, is like the definition...
I'm not talking about Trump's policies,
okay, it's the definition of disastrous. But when you're talking about Kamala, we're comparing the two
candidates. Trump's, yes, are inflationary. Kamala's would have literally killed investment. Like,
they would
not
have.
Completely murdered it. What do you think happens when you take 25% of gains that haven't even been sold in investment? And then on top of that, once they do sell them, you take another 28%. Do you think anyone's going to want to invest
in that? Real quick. So I think that the nice thing about Kamala Harris is that I agree that some of her economic policy probably wouldn't have been great. But the nice thing about, like, bad economic policy from Democrats is that I know it'll be checked by other people in the administration. Donald Trump has absolutely no checks on any of the crazy economic stuff he does. So in terms of increasing, like, the child tax credit, I think Kamala could have done that, and I think it would have been fine, and I think we would have been okay with that. But, like, in terms of, like, all the crazy deductions or everything she would have pushed for, or, like, the wealth tax or whatever, I think that the economic advisors would have actually checked Kamala and said, like, hey, this is maybe not a great idea.
Okay, so,
but for Trump, nobody checks Trump on any of his economic policy.
Just to clarify, your argument here is you don't think her policies actually would have been pushed, so basically we should vote for her?
Yes.
Ridiculous.
Well, you say it's ridiculous, but the issue is that, like, Donald Trump has gotten us to accept a world where a 10% tariff on every single country is, like, the moderate option, and any economist prior to Trump would have said, like, that's, like, suicide.
No,
so
I
think the issue is that, like,
so
if a Democrat comes in with, like, crazy shit, a Democrat will say, I feel the same way about Mamdani in New York, where it's like, if a Democrat does some crazy, crazy stuff, like, their economic advisor will be like, hey, this is probably, like, too much, and they'll listen. Whereas Donald Trump will say, we should just come on to the media and, like, say this for today, and let's, like, fucking do this, and nobody has the actual, like, the goal to actually check Trump and say, like, hey, this is a really bad idea. So I want to ask you this then.
Yeah. So if, hypothetically, the economic advisors are out of the question, their policies will be passed, then would you agree with me that Kamala's policies would be worse for the economy?
Like, possibly, but that would never happen. I don't think that Kamala's
It on basically it won't happen. To be clear.
Well, but, like, do you understand there's a difference between Kamala and Trump, and that whatever Trump says goes? Like, hold on. Like, let's be real. Like, for instance, when Donald Trump held up the tariff sign, that was a total lie, right? When he said that
the
every country's...
Liberation Day tariffs.
Yeah, when he said that every single country's tariffing us like this, that was a lie, right?
Yeah, I don't agree with his tariff
policies.
Kamala would
have never done that.
I am not defending his tariff policies. I'm just saying Kamala's policies were absolutely disastrous and would have killed any investment whatsoever.
Yeah, but, like, but the worst of Kamala's policies would have never made it past any economic advisors, right?
Also, acting like Kamala's...
Can I get an acknowledgement on that?
The worst
of her policies would have never actually, like, gotten passed, right?
I'm not going to debate whether or not they would have. I think
what was the worst economic policy that Biden passed?
The worst that he passed? He didn't have the same platform that Kamala did.
I just want to check. Uh-huh. Kamala Harris was the vice president under Joe Biden.
Yes, I am aware, but to be clear.
I get to ask a question, okay?
Yeah.
Stop. Kamala Harris would have been checked by her economic advisors if it was truly a disastrous policy. But Donald Trump is not checked by anybody, right?
I don't necessarily agree with that, no.
Even
if I grant that, I think you should be able to defend the policies in the party you support's platform, at the very least.
You're not going to defend tariffs, though.
Hmm?
You're conservative and you won't defend tariffs.
No, I'm defending it from the...
So you think we should be able to defend Kamala's
fringe
policies?
Let me finish, please. I'm defending it from a perspective of his policies are not as bad as Kamala's. That is not a strong stance, I agree, but at least I can defend it from that.
What would Kamala have passed that's worse than the Trump current tariff thing?
Wait, what? Sorry?
What would Kamala have passed, reasonably, that is worse than Trump's current tariff regime?
The unrealized gains tax, the 8% increase in capital gains tax. Again, you can claim it won't pass, but you're hinging your argument on, the policy platform wouldn't have happened. So
yeah, but
if you don't want to support your policy platform,
we can reasonably say that because because Democrats are actually concerned with fucking running the fucking country, right? You acknowledge that, like, the country's been fucked by Republicans over and over again since Clinton, and Democrats have to come in and, like, clean shit up, right? So isn't it fair for us to say, well, Democrats should probably follow what their economic advisors say?
I don't think it's fair to say that your party's platform doesn't matter because it's not going to be passed.
No. It's like, not that it doesn't matter. It's that she would probably push in that direction. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is literally trying to find people to sit on the Federal Reserve who will cut interest rates because he knows it's the only way to save his horrible fucking economy, right? You don't think Kamala would ever do that, right?
Sorry,
like, wait, there's no history of Kamala Harris or Joe Biden pressuring the Federal Reserve to drop the interest rate like there is with Donald Trump, right?
That's disastrous. Off the top of my head, but yeah, it's just the policies themselves.
Wait, bro, hold on. Uh-huh. We got to live in the real world. You agree with that, right? We need to be in the real world.
Wait, what?
We need to be in the real world, right? Okay,
yeah,
Donald Trump right now, you acknowledge it. Donald Trump,
in the real world, Donald Trump
is talking about putting a new Federal Reserve Board person on the Federal Reserve that will follow his direct instruction, right? You acknowledge that, right?
I'm not entirely sure about that. What I'm talking about is, again, the platforms.
Donald Trump is literally trying to criminalize people on the Federal Reserve, like making up like fake bullshit indictments about like mortgage fraud.
You've never heard him say too late, Powell, too late, Jerome. Are you not aware of this? You're aware of Kamala's capital gains tax policy?
Has Joe Biden ever said, like, hey, we need to do this on the Federal Reserve?
Regardless, what I am asking about is the platform of the Democratic Party in the 2024 election, if it were to be passed compared to the platform, or actually, no, I'd even say the implemented economic policies. I'm asking you guys to defend that, and you can't defend your own party's platform, and you're basically just saying it wouldn't have passed.
I don't agree with Kamala's platform entirely, but when we're making a decision in the 2024 election, when I was making the decision, I was thinking, which candidate's policies are more disastrous? And it's absolutely Donald Trump's, 10 out of 10 times.
Because Donald Trump will pass anything, and none of you guys, for whatever reason, have the balls to actually fucking say, Donald Trump, no!
Do you think it's bad if he is bullying the chair of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell? If he is breaking that separation and trying to bully Jerome Powell into taking action, do you think that's bad?
Do I think it's bad if he's bullying Jerome Powell?
Do you know Jerome Powell?
Yes, I do know who Jerome Powell is. Yeah, I'd say it probably is, but again,
it's unprecedented, it's fascistic, and the president isn't supposed to have an effect on interest rates.
Again,
if the president is changing interest rates on his own instinct...
Yeah, I don't think the government should have an effect on interest rates.
Okay, of course.
That's a whole other thing.
Okay, so when I'm looking at my two candidates, and I see some of Kamala's fringe ideas that I disagree with, that I wouldn't defend, I'd actually, if I was talking to Kamala,
I would debate Kamala on Trump's implemented policies versus the Democratic Party platform, and I haven't heard a defense of the Democratic Party platform. All I've heard is Trump. I'm asking about Kamala.
Kamala Harris had a first-time homebuyers policy that created an incentive for people our age.
Yes, and Kamala Harris had multiple small business policies.
Kamala Harris had multiple policies that helped small businesses start up. Kamala Harris had incremental policies that she would have put into place, and then some more populist policy that probably would have gotten swatted down, just like Biden's student loan relief, just like the ambitious stuff that Biden tried got swatted down. This would happen to Kamala's policy.
Asking about what you think is going to get swatted down. I'm asking the policies themselves.
Okay, listen, this is the problem. I've asked you like 10 times about Trump's tariffs, and you go, I won't defend that. But then you go, I want you to defend Kamala's fringe policies that you don't support.
I'm asking you to just show me that the economy would function under Kamala's policies. Like, there would be investment.
You know what the problem is?
Completely stifled. And
okay, wait, let me go ahead. So the stock market growth has slowed down since Trump took office because of his tariffs. Unemployment has gone up since Trump took office because of his tariffs and a few other issues. Inflation.
Yeah, imagine how bad that would have been if we had a 25% tax on unrealized gains.
Inflation has gone up since Trump took office. All of these indicators were going down as Biden was leaving. Trump has legitimately... You know what's not impressive? It's not impressive that the stock market's hitting all-time highs. It's impressive that Trump has crashed the stock market three separate times during his presidency and slowed the growth of it. That's the impressive part. Would Kamala Harris have crashed the stock market on April 9th? Liberation Day tariffs.
Would she have crashed the stock market? She would have completely destroyed it. She wanted a 28% tax, like an 8% increase on capital gains tax, a 25%...
What is so bad about an increase on capital gains tax?
It heavily, heavily disincentivizes investment.
No, it doesn't.
Raises the time
what do you
preference.
Mean?
Yes, it does.
How does it?
What are we talking about? How does it? Basically, what you're doing is you're saying, once you make money from your investment and you take it out, then you're going to get less of that. you're less okay. incentivized Listen, if you're going to get less at the end.
I just want to tell you, I got a lot of money invested, okay? Do you think that, like, people with more than $5 or $10 or $15 million in an investment account are thinking, like, oh my God, 25% capital gain instead of 20%? Like, I'm not going to be able to invest my money anymore? What do you think they're going to do? Hide it in their fucking pillow?
No. First, she's taking 25% when your money is not even pulled out yet. When it's just there materializing, she's
taking
money.
Are you talking about the wealth tax?
Then... Huh?
Are you talking about like a wealth tax?
I'm talking about the unrealized capital gains tax.
No, listen, I agree with you. The unrealized capital gains tax is so stupid.
It's so dumb.
Thing is, here's the difference. When Kamala Harris says it, when Democrats have a really dumb idea, they can't get it done. We can look at examples of this. For Biden, Biden wanted to do like OSHA mandates for vaccines, and he wanted to do like Department of Education stuff for like forgiving student loans. And when they were stopped, Biden said, oh, well, I guess they're stopped. Now, the far left attacks him for that, but the reality is that Democrats respect the three branches of government. Donald Trump says, I'm going to do as much as I can until I basically have to be forced to actually stop the particular thing.
Yes.
So if Kamala wanted to do a wealth tax, I don't think she would ever
question.
Yeah.
Basically, so you agree if she was able to get all of her policies passed, basically if she acted like you claim Trump does, which... Then would you agree that her policies
are worse?
Even
if that was the case, it wouldn't be as disastrous as the insane tariff regime that Donald Trump has enacted. Where Trump is the sole gatekeeper.
I think having some inflation from tariffs is not as bad as having literally no investment.
Hold on. Wait, we wouldn't have literally no investment. Do you think American businesses are worth investing in at a higher capital gains rate?
Investment would go down like this. Like there,
you realize maybe
why would you invest in American companies knowing that we're going to be like reciprocally tariffed by every single other country on the planet?
Tariffs are way worse for incentivizing.
Yeah, tariffs are so bad.
You realize manufacturing in the United States has gone
again,
down.
This is just deflecting the tariffs. I want again address the unrealized
gains. Yeah, but like what we're trying to say is that like the tariffs would have never happened under Kamala because the economic advisor would say, "Hey, these tariffs are a really bad idea." But for Trump, none of the Republicans are actually brave enough to say, "Like, hey, don't do this."
Advisor would say that actually they would have overturned his initial tariffs from his 2016 presidency. But that's besides the point. She's not anti-tariff, to be clear. But
wait, there's a difference between Kamala wanting to do surgical targeted tariffs on countries versus Trump placing tariffs on every fucking country, save Russia and North Korea. Yeah. That's retarded. That's different.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think the tariffs were a good policy.
Okay,
How come you can say that, but
when I say I don't think unrealized gains is a good policy, that's like the end
of
the world.
You're
like,
because I'm asking you to defend it comparing the two parties.
I thought which was worse.
Yeah. Which one's worse is what I'm asking.
Okay. And I think it's Trump's. I think that Trump has slowed the growth of the stock market, increased unemployment. His tariffs have been such a disaster, they've actually disincentivized investments. So for the tariffs, for example, what you want is continuity between administrations. So when, say, J.D. Vance or Gavin Newsom gets in, that administration still has the incentive for companies to come to the United States. When you place tariffs via executive order, like Trump is doing, it's all via executive order, right? When you do that, there's no continuity. So in 4 years... companies don't have any reason to be here. Like, when you're making these investment decisions, they are long-term investments. A company's coming to the United States, that's decades, dude. That's like, you're there for like 20, 30 years to gain a profit. When there's no continuity, what they see right now are two trade zones in the United States. One big red trade zone that says the United, or sorry, in the world. Two trade zones in the world. One red blob that says the United States. It says, do not go through the United States. They have a 10% tariff on everyone. Then there's the rest of the world, which has an average tariff of, I think, like 3.5%. So when you're looking at your two shipping routes, do you want to ship it to the United States and get tariffed to shit, or the rest of the planet, which has a lower tariff rate? Do you get what I'm saying here? Like, the incentive structure that Trump is creating is not strong. The stock market is slowed in growth. Unemployment.
Again, I'm asking, I still haven't heard an adequate defense of Kamala's.
The stock market would be higher if Kamala were in office. The stock market would unequivocally be higher.
The whole economy would be doing better if Kamala's
in office. The whole economy would be doing better.
Again,
like,
with an
8%
increase in capital gains tax and a 25% unrealized gains tax, that's hard to believe.
Who cares?
The investors that
I don't,
run
dude,
this
I'm
stock.
An investor. I don't give a fuck. Why would you care about a 25% versus 15% or whatever? Like, it doesn't matter that much.
It's 0% right now.
I'm a what?
You'd literally just...
Wait. What do you think I would do with my money otherwise if it was 25% versus 15%?
Versus 0% unrealized gains
Wait. Oh, unrealized? Unrealized shit would have never passed.
Unrealized is so dumb, dude. I hate unrealized tax.
Okay, so I think we agree on the unrealized gains.
Ready? This is the killer question. What was the worst economic policy that Biden realized?
The worst economic policy
realized? Yeah, the worst one. Wait, the fact that you even have to think about it speaks volumes to that, right? Well, Donald Trump...
No.
Ignore these guys. Fuck, they're dick riders, okay? But, like, I'm saying that, like...
Because, I mean, regardless, I don't think Biden and Kamala had the same platform. So I have to think about it when I was thinking about
I might be too far gone. Yeah. Kamala was the vice president, right?
I think so.
She was, but
Kamala,
she's very...
Gonna
no,
be,
Biden...
Wait, wait, Biden,
all
was,
four,
Biden was Obama's
all,
vice president,
all
right?
All four policies I listed at the start were policies that Biden did not have in
okay,
his platform.
Okay, but I'm just saying that, like, Biden seemed to do an okay job at guiding the economy. Same way with Obama, right?
No, I think that Medicare was Medicare for All was disastrous.
We didn't get Medicare for All.
Or sorry, Obamacare.
Wait, wait. Brain, if the ACA was such a fucking disaster, there. Why is Trump trying to claim it so much? When Trump is like, oh, we need to have like the increased rate of where you're like 25 or 26.
The status quo in general is absolutely terrible. But
wait,
I think the
have
Democratic
you seen the
Party
graph
has,
that where it's like the healthcare costs like they increase slower under Obamacare than they did under the when they were prior to that? Wait, what part of the ACA do you think is bad?
What part of it is bad? It's inherently inflationary on Medicare.
Everything, bro,
costs.
Healthcare is more expensive because we have more fucking healthcare. All of it is inflationary. What do you mean? Of course.
Yeah, but no, the inflation actually did increase after the Obamacare.
Yeah, but it was increasing at a slower rate, right? This is your first derivative, right? It's increased at a slower, the rate of change is lower than the first rate of change, then
no,
it was.
No,
It was. Wait. Hold on. You're about to completely own me. Okay, ready? This is your chance to totally own me. What was Trump's alternative again?
What was Trump's alternative?
Yeah, what was
to,
the Trump alternative
to the healthcare?
To the ICA? Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
There's a reason why you're not.
I'm not asking you. I'm not asking you about Trump. I am asking you about Kamala.
Wait, I just want to check with Adam. I'm going to confer with Adam real quick. It was Biden who was like, we should cap the cost on certain drugs, right?
Yeah.
Wait, didn't Trump say we should keep doing that but call it like the Trump shit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, again, what the fuck?
All you guys are doing is just attacking the other side, but you won't defend your own.
I'm attacking the second side because they suck shit. They suck shit. They're horrible.
When he asked what the worst policy that Biden realized is and we didn't have an answer.
I'm asking about Kamala, not Biden.
No, it's not that you didn't have an answer. It's that your lack of answers show that there were mechanisms in place during Biden's term that would shoot
Biden
down.
Biden was fucking awesome.
Yeah. Where's that guy in the crowd? Biden was the best. But there were mechanisms in place that would shoot down Trump's awful economic policy, or sorry, Biden's awful economic policy, or like policies that he was trying to pass that were out there. Trump, we haven't seen that. Now, the Supreme Court is hearing the tariff argument right now, but we've just seen so much leeway with the tariffs that it's already been bad for the economy. I think the question that you asked was which one would be worse, but then you keep trying to pin us down on Kamala, and we'll answer for any of Trump's.
Can we say, what would Kamala Harris do that's as bad as the current tariff
again,
shit?
Unrealized gains, 25%.
She wouldn't have gotten that passed, though, right?
Okay, so if your argument's hinging on that, that's fine.
Our argument is that Democrats follow rule of law. Yes, that is the argument. That's kind of been the whole fucking deal with the Trump ad.
So you agree, then. It's just, you only agree that it would have been better because it wouldn't have passed.
Yes.
There are guardrails.
You agree that it wouldn't have passed, right? You agree that it would have passed, right?
I don't necessarily think it would. I'm asking you to defend your party's platform.
No. He's not saying that it would be better because it wouldn't have passed.
Yeah.
He's saying that there were actual guardrails and mechanisms in place that the Democrats respected that Republicans clearly don't respect. Not to take it to
it
like
was in the party platform, to be clear.
Unrealized tax gains is not in the Democratic Party platform.
Read the 2024 platform.
I mean, then that's dumb. I'm not going to defend that. But listen... This one fringe policy from Kamala is far outweighed by Donald Trump's economic retardation on a daily basis. Kamala Harris would not have bullied Jerome Powell. Bullying the Fed chair is like legit next level hungry Viktor Orban shit. Kamala Harris had some dumb policies that I'm not going to defend, but there's a problem here that I keep going back to. You're asking us what's your worst. You keep pinning us down on Kamala's fringe policy, but you won't defend anything Trump has done. You don't know about the Federal Reserve. You don't care about the tariffs. When we're comparing, you at least have to put up the affirmative argument for your side, at least.
Yeah, also,
impact than Kamala's policies. A 25% unrealized gains tax, like I said, would kill investment.
Can I say, first of all, you did a really good job. Thank you so much. We debated in our Jubilee. We got a Jubilee coming out. And this guy and my Jubilee, we had a really good debate.
Yes, thank you, Adam.
Thank you for the conversation.
No, genuinely, you did well.
You were great, too, my brother. Yeah. Yeah, thank you, guys.
That was some good shit.
Everyone can hold it at this point.
Speak loud.
What's up?
He's like
25% unrealized tax gains. We're like,
I'm a left-leaning Marine veteran. I'm Hispanic as well. Immigration is one of my big things, right? But I feel like there's been a a question that hasn't been asked that I think would make a good what if questions, right? And that is like, what are some ways that immigration lawyers, can I cuss, by the way? What are some ways that immigration lawyers can fuck over immigrants, right?
Can you say that one more time? I'm sorry.
What are some ways that immigration lawyers can fuck over immigrants?
That's a good question.
Why are you looking at me for that?
That's a good question for Steven.
Yeah.
Wait, how can immigration lawyers fuck over immigrants?
Yes.
The immigration process in the United States is really complicated.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure they could give them bad advice. That would fuck them over. Why are you giving me this question? Yeah. What the fuck? Fuck you, bro.
I didn't give this
fuck
question.
You. Why are you pointing at me? Like, yeah. I know the answer to this.
I can answer it, but like, I mean, you give them bad advice.
That would be fucking over,
I mean,
right?
I would assume that some immigration lawyers may have a profit incentive that doesn't align with helping the immigrant in play. But I mean, what's your answer?
I mean, that it pretty much comes close to what I was thinking. Is that most immigration lawyers will steal whatever amount they're charging their clients. Right, and basically just leave them into dirt, and because they're not educated enough, or right, they don't know how to speak the language, right? They don't know how to retaliate, right? Which there are incentives to retaliate, but if you're somebody with a second grade education level as an immigrant trying to provide, you know, a good life for your children, you know, that's not going to work out for you, right?
It's really fucked up because of the power differentiation,
whoa,
too.
Hold on. Wait. What is the overall point you're trying to make? That most immigration lawyers are fucking over their clients?
I'm trying to make that there is a problem with immigration lawyers fucking over their clients.
Wait, what is the problem?
The problem is that most immigrants don't know where, legal processes to go through in order for you to, like, go after them, right?
Wait, so, like, is there a massive problem with immigration lawyers fucking over their clients?
Yes. I wouldn't say I don't know the statistics on it, just because it's like I can't give you numbers to verify it, but like anecdotally, I have someone close to me that has been fucked over, right? Not gonna say names, right? If you guys want me to, I can.
No,
but,
no,
like,
you're not to say
yeah,
names.
Yeah. But there are also, like, anecdotal situations that come into process where deportations are unjustified, or I would classify unjustified because they're just trying to provide for something, right? And I feel like these questions have never been asked, and that's a big major point as to why immigrant or criminal activities happen under immigrants, right? I'm somebody that loves that area. I love that sector, but like, I don't like to see it being demonized the way Trump has been demonizing it to this day, you know? And I feel like these questions have never been asked to like expand on that, right? Like add the morality aspect towards it.
I think it's an important point. He's saying that immigration lawyers are abusing their power dynamics by taking immigrants.
I don't think we have any evidence of this. I mean, like, I think the biggest...
Well, no, this happens all the time. Like, people upcharging in situations where they can upcharge. For example, I took my dog to the vet a few months ago, and they were trying to convince some family to keep their dog there overnight.
For your dog or the other dog?
Another dog. They were trying to convince the dog, and they tried to convince me too, but I didn't do it. They convinced his family to keep the dog there overnight, but it was an extra $1,200.
What's wrong with your dog?
My dog ate a lot of chocolate.
And they tried to, did they try to keep your dog
they
overnight?
Tried to keep my dog overnight and said, it's an extra $1,000, but this is the safest way to do it, man. They said, there's a risk.
Wait, maybe there was a risk your dog was going to fucking die,
There
bro.
Maybe was, but my dog was fine. He shit it out the next morning.
Well, they ended up being fine, but maybe your dog was going to die.
But the point is...
Why are you feeding your dog so much fucking chocolate?
He accidentally ate the fucking chocolate, bro.
Maybe they wanted to keep it overnight to monitor it. You're just assuming that they had bad intentions. Maybe your dog was going to die. Wait, how old is your dog? What kind of dog is it?
This is very much so besides
the
point.
It's very relevant, because you're trying to say they were abusing their position as a vet, but maybe they thought your dog was going to die, and maybe you fed it way too much.
Veterinarians will absolutely try to upcharge and take advantage of clients. Like, you don't think that happens?
I hate animals, so I don't like to
you. What do you think?
But I wouldn't feed my dog a ton of chocolate. If you fed your dog a ton of chocolate?
Not on purpose.
This guy's fucking feeding his dog fucking peanut butter M&M's over here,
too.
And he's like, the vet wants to upcharge me or whatever. Come on. Listen, bro, what the fuck?
All I'm going to say is...
Maybe some people are upcharging. I don't think this is a significant problem. I don't think it's a real... Because he said, I don't have any data. That's key word for, like, this
white
is just, like,
man,
some shit I read on
white
Twitter.
White citizen
right?
Doesn't think it's a problem.
Okay. Half my family is Cuban. Excuse me.
Okay.
Watch out, Mr. Been, Adam Hitler, Cape the Führer. Okay, calm down over there, buddy.
Jesus
okay,
Christ. Right. Disculpe, pero puedes hablar español.
Do what? Say that again?
Can you speak Spanish?
Yes, más o menos.
Yeah. We'll count it for now, but, I mean, last time I checked, you had cats, right?
Not anymore, no. That was my always a partner that has the cats.
Okay. Never mind then. I retract that question.
There could be like immigration lawyers to take advantage of the system, but I mean, there's a potential abuse that exists everywhere. But like, I don't think it's a significant problem. No.
The only reason why I say that is because my girlfriend has a uncle that's an immigration lawyer, and he says that's a big major problem that happens in immigration, right? Because it's like the easiest way to get $3,000, right? That's an anecdotal thing that I'm gonna say, right? But $3,000, you take away from somebody, they don't retaliate. Hey, you just came up with $3,000.
I mean, I guess it's possible. I would say one of the worst things about like immigration stuff is that like if you're following the lawful process,
yes.
Like Donald Trump has ICE agents camping out the courthouses. The big story about the guy with the Iranian wife, the Persian wife or whatever, that was deported, she was like in like 10 or 20 years of like immigration back and forth, but she was following the legal process and she was showing up at the courthouse. And that's where ICE is like camping out to get you. Like, wouldn't you want these people more than anybody else to stay in the country because they're going to the courthouse and they're trying to follow the proper procedure?
One of the things that I will say, and this is another anecdotal that if you want to know the information of it, I can tell you afterwards, but... another one is a high school teen ended up selling meth because her mother couldn't provide for her two other children, right? Three children total. And basically, he had to sell meth to make ends meet as a high school child, right? Somebody who was excelling in science, right? He loved science to death. He probably would have become a science fucking a scientist, right? But because the situations didn't align with him, right? The path that ended up going with him was he ended up selling meth, got deported, and now he's fucked from the system because...
Yeah, I mean, that's really bad, but, like, is that an immigrant problem? Like, what's more American than selling drugs to high school students? I feel like it's a very American thing, no?
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Good question. That was good.
Don't ask me any more questions.
Good evening, gentlemen. Like the last speaker, I'm also a Marine Corps veteran. I'm actually still serving, and I like to say that I'm a great fan of Destiny's content, so it's a great pleasure to meet him in person. However, despite that, I do identify myself with the Nick Fuentes-aligned version of America First. And my question pertains to sort of Nick Fuentes's meteoric rise in popularity. What's the left-wing version of addressing the sort of rising authoritarian beliefs in primarily young men, especially those in the armed forces?
I don't know if the left has a solution. That's the problem. I mean, I talk about this a lot on my show, young men and the radicalization, moving towards authoritarianism, and I have a pretty good idea of how it happens. I think that I trace a lot of it back to COVID isolation or anti-socialization. So you can see a direct spike in anti-social behavior among Gen Zers throughout the COVID pandemic. Throughout people's most formative years, there's a bubble that's put up around them. Me too. I hung out with people less. I spent more time alone. And some people never tore that bubble down. Like Tyler Robinson, for example, I can guarantee he got radicalized on the internet, was a little bit of a loner, and that led to him doing what he was doing. You combine a bunch of young men being anti-social, spending a lot of time on the internet, with the fact that foreign actors are trying to incentivize division in the United States. How much does Russia or China or Iran benefit when they have U.S. young guys who have these radical beliefs that think that authoritarianism is cool, that Trump is cool? Other countries are trying to actively sow division in our country, and you have domestic actors, people like Elon Musk. Elon Musk bought the platform of X, or he bought Twitter, rebranded it to X, and now it's like a propaganda machine. Like, you align with Nick Fuentes, but I'm sure you can admit that on Twitter, it's like Nazi Germany on Twitter right now. All throughout Twitter, it's a bunch of crazy anti-Semitic racist shit. So when this is the media environment that we're in, the social media environment, where a bunch of lonely young men don't have moral clarity from leaders, and they just get sucked up in these online algorithmic pipelines, I think that's how it happens. I think Vladimir Putin is fucking licking his lips right now, seeing how much he succeeded in making half the U.S. population think the election of 2020 was stolen. You get what I'm saying? So I don't have, like, a prescription that the Democratic Party... I mean, like, people have talked about repealing Section 230. People have talked about other sort of social media guidelines. I don't have, like, the best direct answer. It's a big, broad question. But we both identify the same issue, I think, at least. Well, it seems like you are one of the radical young men.
I am, yes.
Okay, you are. So what do you think?
I put more faith in my fellow countrymen. I believe that it's not so much a species of foreign country involvement sort of propagandizing us. I think it's more along the lines of people becoming more conscientious, more educated, What they're doing is they're looking, I think, at it from a top-down view, sort of generalizations, and they filter those generalizations down into which candidate fits the bill the most. Like myself, I sort of start at the top and see, what do I want to see my society look like? As a service member, I want to see my entire country look like a nation of soldiers. I want to see every city look like an army camp. When I look and I sort of trickle that idea down, I wonder which politician best fits that bill. And it is, to a degree, Donald Trump, but I think the biggest criticisms, which are true, is that he doesn't quite steer the ship of state quite well. I think he doesn't perform very well as a bureaucrat, but the problem is he may not know how to steer the ship, but I think his destination is the correct course.
So when Trump says something like, I wish my people stood for me like they stood for Kim Jong-un, you think that that's actually like a good thing? Like he should work towards that?
I think a politician should indeed have a sort of preference towards his own national identity.
You want us to be more like North Korea in the way that we work? Militarily?
Militarily, yes. I think the biggest idea, when you look especially at the... There's an idea, there's a saying in the military called...
You say you love America, but you want us to be more like North Korea. Like, we're pretty uniquely good as a country right now with our freedom, our democracy, our liberalism. We've created nice quality of life. We've extended people's lifespans. I don't think the North Korea thing works, but sorry, keep going.
Well, I find myself among the chorus of people that are crying out for a Caesar, that are crying out for a Napoleon. And when I do, since I'm greatly intrigued by politics, whenever I'm at my unit and talking politics with my fellow service members, I've noticed a growing trend of more and more people joining that chorus.
I mean, I think it's anti-status quo stuff, but...
Can I... Okay. When you talk about, like, Caesar and Napoleon, right, their country is kind of fucked, right? Like, Greece, Rome, France, like, these countries all... I don't want to say they failed, because France exists today and Greece is... they're kind of there. They have bad food, but they exist, right? I want to hear this. Like, America is the most cucked country in terms of trans people and multiculturalism and all this, but, like, we have the sickest military, the best economy. We are, like, the envy of the world. Why do you think it is that, like, these ideologies tend to produce, like, the best countries, like the United States of America, versus like your fascist, I'm not to call you fascist, but like the very like militant, like we're like racial purity, like these countries disappeared in less than a generation. Does it ever give you pause where you're like, maybe there might be something I'm missing to like the more inclusive types of societies, right? That include like people like you that I super disagree with, but I think it's so cool that you can come up here and express your disagreement. But like, I feel like in your ideal country, I don't know if I'd be able to express my disagreement without like being locked up by the thought police,
like
you know?
Like a hyper-militarized country? Yeah, like what do you think about
that? Yeah.
There is a trade-off with that, I agree. That when
I agree. I agree there's a trade-off, and I value the fact that you, like, our birth rates are low, Jews have a lot of pull in some areas. Like, I agree with that. But I like the fact that you can come up in my society and you can say, hey, isn't it weird that, like, the Jews are in all these different areas? Isn't it weird that, like, our birth rate is below replacement while in the West Bank the replacement is, like, 3.0? I think Israel is the only country on the planet with, like, above 2.0 replacement for people. I love the fact that you can express that, and I can sit here and I can call you dumb or I can disagree with you, I can debate with you, but I feel like in your model society, I don't know if I would be able to say that same thing. And while I value your ability to say that thing, I feel like if we move to your ideal society, we would lose that, and we would become like one of the societies that disappear in like a single generation, you know? Do you ever give any, I'm just curious, do you ever give any thought to that? Yeah.
This might make you laugh, but I do agree. I do believe in American exceptionalism. I don't think it's a matter of, especially when you look at the past, when I would argue the society was a little more militarized, especially during the World War I, World War II, interwar periods. When you look at definitely media back then, you definitely do see it as a sort of window into the past. That's how I see it. I sort of see it as a sort of opportunity cost we might have lost in going down the road of classical liberalism.
Yeah, but even like when you look at like World War II and everything, like we had like women like joining the workforce. Europe was like killing itself because Europe is always like fighting with each other and doing that stuff. Like the United States like came out as like the clear dominant winner in all of that. We had our civil rights movement in the 60s. We had, we've probably been ahead when you talk about the Stonewall riots when it comes to like gay rights or LGBT stuff. Like I felt like we've been at the forefront of all of that. And even in 2025, regardless of our problems, nobody looks at the United States as like, wow, that's a weak country, right? Like imagine imagine in 2014 when Russia was like, we're going to fuck up Ukraine, you know? They, like, barely captured Crimea. They failed horribly a couple of years ago in taking over, you know, in the Ukrainian capital. But in the United States, we're like, we're going to go to war with Iraq. Bro, we fucking toppled that shit in, like, a few weeks. Like, I understand what you're saying. Like, we need, like, a purpose. We need to have, like a moral guidance for our people. Like, I agree with that. But I think that one of the values of the United States that people on your side, I'll say respectfully, tend to, like, discredit is the fact that we allow for so many different types of points of view that we're able to, like, advance into the future with all these different competing points of view. We don't actually, like, give ground completely to one. Because the societies in the past that seem to have given all that ground to one, like, disappear in, like, 5 or 10 years. Like, I guess that's the only point that I view. Like, when I look at, like, New York City, Miami, when I look at San Francisco, these are, like, the most diverse cities in the world. They got, like, tons of different people. And there can be people like you who disagree with it. But if I go to, like, other equivalent areas, if I go to the UAE, if I go to Saudi Arabia, if I go to Russia, I can't find all these other disagreeers that have, like, different points of view. But those countries, not to be mean to anybody else, those countries suck compared to the United States of America. That's the only thing that I can kind of look at, you know, and I think there's value in that. I think there's value in your point of view and my point of view, but I think there's even more value in the system that allows the points of view to exist and coincide with one another and to fight with one another, you know?
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank we you. Got 15 Sorry. Minutes. Let's try to get through the rest of these really
thank
quick.
Thank you so much for the question. I appreciate it.
That was a good one. Thank you for your service.
Hi, first, my name is Noah. Yeah, went to AmFest, so not probably not on this aisle, but I'd like to say thanks to everyone that I've talked to so far has been very kind to me. So I'd like to say thank you very much for that. And,
of course.
My question is, because I went around AmFest and I kept asking the same question. I'm very curious what y'all's answer is because I never got a straight one and it kind of made me angry. Is I asked them why no politician, like, will attempt to balance the budget at all. And everyone inside of it, at least at AmFest, kept dodging my question or they wouldn't give me a straight answer. And I guess I'm asking from the liberal point of view, like, where do y'all view it? Like, do you think it's just, like, it's not possible? Like, is that, and they just don't want to tell me that? Or what do you think? Like,
doesn't it necessitate a lot of benefit cuts, which are really unpopular?
I feel like there's two big things at play. One is everybody likes spending. They just like spending on their own shit, right? And then two, like, this sounds politically partisan, but when Democrats come into office, bro, we got to clean up so much shit. What the fuck? When Obama came in, we had the whole global financial meltdown. And then when Biden came in, we had fucking COVID. And I feel like when you look at the deficits that Trump was running after Obama, I think in the third year of his term, before COVID came in, his deficit was, like, higher than Obama's entire last term. So, if you just give us a run at the budget for 4 years without, like, a massive economic disaster afterwards, I feel like Democrats could do it. I think it's possible to do, but the problem is that, like, Democrats like entitlements and Republicans like tax cuts. And you know, from a personal level, if you're trying to balance a budget in your home, you have your income and you've got your outlays. And Democrats like their outlays and Republicans like their income, right? So Republicans will cut the income as much as they can with all the tax cuts, and Democrats like to, you know, enforce their outlays. Like, we need to be taking care of the poorest in society. And until people are ready to kind of, like, address either end of that, I feel like we're always just going to, like, run a massive
debt. It's like
debt
balancing down. The budget would rely on a party running on some really unpopular shit, doing some really unpopular shit that cuts money from places that don't work. So, like, yeah.
So I guess my problem was, because when I asked some people at AmFest, they said, well, it's just mathematically impossible. And I was like, that didn't make so much sense to me. And my question is, when you say, like, in 4 years you think you could balance the budget, my question is, why do you think it's in, like, some people's minds where... Because I got now through Turning Point, I've got to talk to some Democrat politicians and some Republican politicians, and I've gotten similar answers where they're like, mathematically, it's impossible. And then I'm wondering, why do they view it as impossible, or they know it's possible, they just don't want to try?
It's possible, okay? Like, I don't know where Adam's at. This motherfucker's like 19 years old and makes like $20 million, okay? So I made 7 figures last year. If you want to tax me 1 or 2 more percentage points, right? When I live in the United States of America making $3 million a year, I can go to a restaurant, I can go outside and take a taxi, I can do all these things. If you're telling me that I have to pay a few extra percentage points to handle that, that's fine. That's awesome.
I
want to be wealthy in the best country on the planet, right? So when Democrats are saying we could balance the budget, we just need to have the income tax just like a couple points higher. Do you think that anybody's leaving the United States because the top tax bracket changes from 37 to 39%? Nobody's fucking leaving, right? Nobody's leaving fucking New York because I'm dying. That's not happening because New York City's an awesome place to live. But then on the Republican side, they're like, we want to give you these tax cuts. 2%, that's not make, like, so I get $120K a month as opposed to like $110K a month? Do you think my lifestyle changes? changing much? Probably not. But the budget is getting destroyed. And when they're trying to make cuts to Medicaid as a result of that, to give me like $10,000 more a month, I'm not doing anything different with my money. I'm just saying that like the Democrats have a more realistic plan to approach. Like, hey, maybe we should take care of all these other people in society and like tax the top, you know, a couple percentage points more. It's not going to change their life. But the Republicans are like, we need to give them all the tax cuts and then we need to cut fucking Medicaid? What the fuck? That's crazy to me, right?
Yeah.
Like, I need to have, like, a yacht there or a plane or whatever that's slightly more expensive, but the people on Medicaid shouldn't have the coverage? I feel like the Democrat
Rural hospitals got cut and shit.
Yeah,
like,
the Democrat approach is just, it's a little bit more realistic than the Republican approach. It's like, fuck everybody, you know?
You know what's interesting? I think to add on to this, Mitt Romney. Did you see what Mitt Romney posted, like, last week? I have it pulled up. He said, Mitt Romney, he said, we've reached a point where any mix of solutions to America's economic problems is going to involve the wealthiest Americans contributing more. Then he wrote an article saying that it's very important to raise some taxes on the ultra wealthy and close loopholes that he calls caverns. So, I mean, it would be unpopular for Republicans or any, like, Republicans trying to bite this bullet would be impossible. No one wants to cut benefits. It necessitates doing some really unpopular shit. I think Mitt Romney's on the right path, and what you were saying is on the right path. Like, in order to fix this problem, or at least start fixing this problem, the ultra, ultra wealthy will have to contribute. And it's interesting because, like, I hate the communist shit where it's like, fuck billionaires. Billionaires shouldn't be. I think billionaires create a lot of value. I think that there can be there's a lot of wealth disparities, but oftentimes, what?
No, that's a brave take. I agree. Yeah,
but
when you're talking about the taxes, like, this is my issue with like liberals. Liberals like, when you have like a fucking wealth tax, but like, no, just take all the tax brackets and bump them like 2 points, and you make like fucking $500 billion in tax revenue. Like, just do that. Solidifying the Trump tax cuts was disastrous for our budget. For all of the trouble that Biden had balancing his budget, it was because the Trump tax cuts were extended were through his term, and then Trump solidified them. You had Doge come in and did fuck all, right? And you had Trump solidify the Trump's tax cuts, and again, like you said, like, if a guy's making like $3 million a year, do you think that him paying an extra like what, like 30 or 40K is like, oh, like, I'm gonna leave the US? It's not happening. Whereas like an extra 30 or 40K towards like Medicaid or anything else, it's like so helpful towards like the working class people. I just think that like the Republicans' obsession with cutting taxes is so stupid. And like rich people don't even appreciate it, because who the fuck cares? But poor people, like, they need the government assistance, which is good because the wealthy people want to live in a country where everybody is, you know, decently taken care of. I think it's a really important thing.
I'm going to say it. We got to cut funding to Israel. That'll be it.
Damn. So, actually, like, so number one, thank you so much, because that's a more direct answer than anyone I got from AmFest. Thank you so much. And then my other question was going to be same kind of line. Why, even in my own Turning Point chapter, I'm not in leadership, so I can't get in trouble for this, but we've had speakers decide no longer to come because my chapter really wants to ask about Israel funding, had two speakers cancel. And so I'm wondering why it is. Why do you think like that's a topic that like everyone's like, no, we can't talk about that one?
I don't know. There's a lot of really religiosity surrounding Israel with voters, and rather than saying that, they use a lot of more. What was so fucking funny?
I'm listening to you. It's fine. Go ahead.
A lot of voters have really, really extreme views on Israel. Like, I'm talking Republican evangelical voters. They vote in these Republican politicians who are then super hard line, don't want to ask any question, but they won't actually admit the whole end day theory oftentimes. So they just say that Israel is a strategic military partner, which I agree. Honestly, I've thought about this a lot too. I mean, I think there's a weird dogma around talking about this. And over the past year and like year and a half, I've made a huge evolution on this issue. Like, I was pretty firmly in favor of Israel going in and taking out Hamas. I still am, of course, but like, something obviously has reached a point where it's too far, and we've hit this point where we can actually start talking about it and asking questions. And now that Pandora's box is open, the Groypers are taking that to the way extreme, but there are legitimate questions you can ask. I think there are legitimate questions you can ask.
We got 10 minutes. Let's
thank you so much.
Questions.
Thank you very much.
Let's
for
get through these last two.
If I were to start a new religion tomorrow called Trumpism, and the core tenet is that you have to do everything and anything that Trump says, and we start churches to funnel money through it, should we be protected from business discrimination, and why?
Wait, would you say the last part again?
Should we be protected from business discrimination, and why?
Yeah, I think if we're all acting like Trump, first of all, kids need to be protected. All of the children in America need to be protected. Would we be protected from business discrimination, like based on race or gender?
Based on religion.
Probably. probably. I mean, if you're going around...
Should you?
If you're going around acting like Donald Trump, like grabbing women or saying that reporters are piggies or that women reporters are terrible humans...
Like,
I mean,
we can think of like six or seven off the top of our
six,
head
Six, seven.
Things.
Good one, buddy. Good fucking one, buddy. On a serious note, if you walked into a restaurant and said to the waitress, quiet piggy, yeah, you'd get kicked the fuck out. Yeah. Maybe not for your religion, but for acting
like
Trump.
You should never be discriminated against for political beliefs. I think in the United States Constitution, we don't discriminate for political beliefs. So, no, you shouldn't be discriminated against for
religious beliefs.
Well, I mean, like...
It's like a hypothetical where Trumpism is a religion.
Yeah, I mean, you can't discriminate for religious beliefs either, right?
Everyone's acting exactly like Trump. Would this behavior be permitted?
Yeah, we already have that. It's called the Republican Party, right? We don't discriminate against them. So, yeah, we're good.
Yeah.
Thank you, thank you. Last question of the night.
Last question of the night. Don't fuck
this
up.
My one and only question is... What the fuck do we do about all this anti-Semitism?
What do we do about all this anti-Semitism? You know, honestly, at this point, I'm kind of done with the Jews. It's annoying to talk about. I don't care anymore.
No.
They blew up all their enemies. Like, are we good at this point? I feel like they got it. I feel like they got it under control.
Just a little bit of context. Come from a very red state. I've had a lot of, like, very close friends, like, closest friends that I have, come out and reject Trump and embrace Fuentes.
Yep,
I'm done with Trump. I hate what he's doing because I hate that he loves Israel. I hate that he loves all the Jews. And then just finding out that all my best friends are just very anti-Semitic, very anti-Jewish. It's a really hard thing to deal with, and I don't know what to do about it,
dude,
and I want some help.
No, I get that. A lot of friends that I grew up with in high school, I still am friends with on Instagram, and I see them liking reels of Nick Fuentes, reposting reels, and I can see how if I were in their shoes and a little bit more apolitical, how it would be captivating, because he is funny. Something that I've been yearning for lately are leaders with more moral clarity, not only in the, like, obviously the Republican Party, but the Democratic Party as well. I would love to see a Democrat come out and say that Say that Israel, for the past 6 to 7 years... No, I'm sorry. I would love to hear a Democrat come out and be like, listen...
Israel are controlling everything, actually. I agree. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
I would like to see a Democrat come out and say, listen, at the end of the day, what Israel is doing in the Gaza Strip is wrong. They can call it a genocide. I don't care. But then also come out with enough clarity about anti-Semitism to swat down that message. It's just the way that Nick Fuentes frames it and the way that a lot of these people frame it, it feels almost intuitive because they say it in such like a charismatic, chill way. But it's the anti-Semitism is getting really, really fucking bad. And
I would riff on this. I think the issue is that, like, and it's so annoying because, like, the conservative side that does this always talks about, like, archetypes and Jungian stuff or whatever. Like, when people get scared of stuff, they retreat into these, like, very predictable patterns of behavior. And one of those patterns of behavior is, like, trying to blame some external force for controlling everything. Because it's nice, rather than having to ask questions of, like, how has society changed? Like, maybe playing League of Legends 24/7 isn't great for us. Or maybe having the internet is, like, actually degrading our social lives in a way that we didn't really predict. It's easy to just look at the Jews and say, well, the Jews are actually the fault of everything. But the reality is that, like, even if we were to get rid of all the Jews in the United States, we would probably still have basically all of these issues. And the most boring thing about anti-Semitism to me is that, like, anti-Semitism becomes like this catch-all for if there's a social problem like low birth rates or too much immigration or a bad economy or affordability issues, we can just kind of like blame the Jews on everything. And like Israel can barely even control its own society. The idea that there's some secret cabal of Jews that are controlling the societies of all these other, you know, countries on the planet is, it's just fantastic. In a bad way, I would say. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, anti-Semitism, I feel like it's the refuge of people that are afraid and they don't want to actually take the steps to identify the real problems of society because they're kind of, like, nonpartisan and they're very difficult to answer. Like, what do we do when people have replaced real-life interaction with Discord calls or real-life dating warm spaces with, like, Tinder groups? Like, that's a very difficult question to answer because I'm going to be honest, like, as an online content creator, like, if I didn't have, you know, like, Instagram or whatever else my big social media guys, I don't know where I would go to fucking, you know, meet women or I don't know where I would go to talk to women or whatever. And I feel like these issues are huge and they're ever-present in society because the internet has fundamentally changed so much of how we engage with people. So then you get this very, like, boring criticism, like, well, I think the Jews are importing, you know, Tyrells to breed out all the Julias. And it's like, okay, well, I mean, that, like, clearly this is such a simplistic answer and all of, you know, history has relied on this answer for things and it's never been the answer to anything. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good description of the problem, but he was asking for a prescription.
So, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's like, I feel like there's a great logical breakdown of, like, what is happening, but, like, when what do you do when it's somebody that you love who's falling into that?
Well, first of all, on a broad scale, I think, like, this is the social media regulation conversation, because anti-Semitism is spreading like wildfire, not due to like IRL conversations people are having, but largely due to online social media clips. When it's happening to someone you love, man, like it's hard. With Trumpism, with any of this type of stuff, it's repeatedly introducing them to fact patterns that can plant a seed of doubt in their head. Even that doesn't work sometimes, because when they're constantly inundated in Nick Fuentes reels, you can't just counter-program them and debate them. But yeah, dude, I've noticed this a lot too. The anti-Semitism is getting worse and worse. I don't know.
I feel like it's really bad.
It's really
it's pretty bad.
Bad.
Sometimes it might
I'm left too, by
might
the way.
Might be triple as, like, just like, you know, having your friends and taking them out and.
What's up?
What?
What'd you say?
Shrimple ass.
I don't know what you said.
Don't worry about it. As simple as like taking friends out, like one of the big issues is that we've lost a lot of like warm spaces where people can just kind of like hang out and chat with each other. Like there's a difference between real life interactions and just like hanging out in Discord groups. And I feel I'm going to be honest, it hurts to say this, but like I'm 37. I can't speak to high school shit right now. When I was in high school, like you couldn't substitute real life interaction with like online interaction. We didn't have like cell phones in class, or we were doing like T9 texting, okay, which was like, it was a very difficult thing. But now when you guys have replaced all of your interactions with like online social media, it's just not good. So you got to like be able to meet and talk to people and talk to people of the opposite sex. And like, I don't think anti-Semitism gets you any closer to that than actually like hanging out with people. But like, that's a whole other, that's a question for the younger generation to answer, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about like, I really do think COVID didn't change anything or whatever. It didn't change everything, but I think it changed a lot in people's behavior and created a lot of antisocial behavior. So we can see in our generation, we're smoking less, having less sex, we're drinking less, we're partying less. Like, you can see this in all the statistics. And I think that is correlated to the increase of anti-Semitism. People are looking for outlets. Again, this isn't really answering how we fix your personal friend's problem. I'm so sorry. Just bring them up here.
I just want to know what to do.
Bro, wait, have you lost anybody to, like, Candace Owens or anything else?
I know some people that
We've lost people to this. We can't, I don't know.
I think that you should go even farther, and you should act like a crazy, unhinged anti-Semite so they think, wait a minute, holy shit, is this where I'm going?
Don't actually do that.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you.
Sorry for the lack of real answer, but good luck. And I'm sorry that's happening.
All right.
It sucks. All right.
Thanks for the question. Thanks to everyone that asked questions. Thanks for coming. Let's give everyone a round of applause.
Thank you guys so much for coming out. Yeah.
We're out. Thank you, Z, for putting on the event and the whole tour as well.
Thank you, everybody. Let's win back in 2026, the midterms. In 2028, let's win. Let's deport Elon Musk, deport all ICE agents. Let's throw... We're going to take Trump's Qatari jet, empty it out, and dump it in the ocean. We are going to bring Elon Musk back and then deport him again. Let's fucking go. I don't know. Anything else?
We got to turn that new White House room into, like, the LGBT appreciation. It's got to be, like, the Trans Hall of Fame or something. What is that new White House?
We're going to rename the White House or the Trump ballroom to the Gavin Newsom ballroom. Or the Joe Biden ballroom.
Yeah, base.
Have a good night, y'all.
Thank you, everybody. That was good.